Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, folks? Check it out. Here we go. Patriot Nation Radio Show live right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Show.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. We got a big show on tap for you tonight. We have a survivor from the Waco Branch Davidian compound attacked by the federal government, which is what really took place down there, was an attack on American citizens. Whether you agree with their religious philosophies or not, just like how they treated the Native Americans up at the Standing Rock with the pipeline. Agree with them or disagree with them. They do not have the right to spray ladies and children and people with water when it's 28 degrees or less outside and shoot ladies' eyeballs out with rubber bullets or burn down a whole compound killing 80 people. I believe there was 9 survivors. One of them is going to be on our show tonight. His name's David, and we are going to talk with him. I don't want to butcher his last name, so we'll let him tell us how to exactly pronounce his last name when he comes on, because sometimes I'm horrible with pronunciations of names, and I don't want to, slice and dice it. But yes, folks, Ruby Ridge and others, the federal government, most recently, with the Bundy situation and the Malia Wildlife Refuge takeover as well, reoccupying the people's land from the federal government as the federal government, 1817, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17, clearly states what the government can own. So they went, as the government was trying to strong-arm the Hammonds, they strong-armed them. What are you talking about? Tried to. They strong-armed them. They put them in jail twice for the same charges. Lavoy Finicum, killed by the FBI, another patriot, murdered at the hands of the FBI, and his anniversary is coming of his death, his slaughter at the hands of the FBI is coming up January 26th. It's my birthday when it happened. I can't believe I just did that. But yes, that's coming up, folks. I want to say hello to everybody there in the live feed. Christina, Christine, Edward, Mark, missed that. Mark Allen Urbach, he ran for governor of Georgia. He had a pretty good crusade there for a few minutes. I want to keep going down. Pearl and Judy, everybody here in the live feed, please share. Jim, hello, Jim. Patrick is watching. What's happening, Patrick? Our newly found friend Beverly is watching. Bev, what's happening? We're going to kick off this show here in just a second. I'm not even going to play the ads. I'm just going to tell you about the websites, and I'll play a clip of a song, and then we'll go on and we'll bring in our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Dave Bray has put out an amazing record. It is called Music on a Mission, the Storyteller Edition. You can find it at DaveBrayUSA.com. And one of the great songs on that song is this song right here. I'm going to play it for a second. I'm going to play a clip, let the audience build a little bit. And you can get a copy of that at DaveBrayUSA.com. And when I'm done with this little clip, I got another quick thing I want to say. And then we're going to rock out. We're going to bring Dave on the show. Here we go. This is Freedom Rings, Dave Bray. This is his new record right after this commercial.
The key to financial wealth.
When you use these websites, you got to deal with the commercial. This is Dave Bray's new record. iTunes bestseller right now, ladies and gentlemen. DaveBrayUSA.com. Just a clip.
For every soul, from every war, across the seas, around our shore, break every fold, pull our flag, the coffins are laid, we hold back, break and dawn. Price was paid.
right, folks. Freedom Rings, DaveBrayUSA.com. Get your copy today. Music on a Mission, the Storyteller Edition. And don't forget, if you're tired of Facebook and all the crap going on there with the censorship and the chopping down of our conservative views and our patriotic minds and hearts, over 800 pages and groups sliced, slashed, diced, and deleted in the name of, oh my goodness, clickbait, spam. It's a joke, it's a scam, it's a sham. It's Facebook squashing the voice of the people. And you know it, I know it, we all know it. That's what's shaking. If you're there in the live feed, Christina, Gary Binford's there. He's a good friend of mine now. I'm glad he tunes in. He posts on the pages. Folks, make sure you tune in and check out Gary Binford. He writes some great stuff, and he posts some great things. Check him out, ladies and gentlemen. He's there on the live feed. If you're in the live feed, say hi to Gary. Hi, Gary. Josh is there. Truth Stands Alone, folks. Make sure you head on over to the page. Seems I've been dominating that page lately with the Patriot Nation Radio. But it's good because, I'm just trying to get the message out with truth, justice, and the American way. Here I come to save the day. Anyway, I don't want to mess around anymore. Just check it out. Go to LibertyRush.com. LibertyRush.com today. That is social media without the libtarded rhetoric. You want to make sure you head on over there and do all the fun things you do here on Facebook. Again, folks, please share, like, keep this video sharing, share it everywhere, share it high and low, share. This is an important show. We're going to tell you how to get a book, how to view the movie. It was an amazing television event, I believe it was back in February or maybe or something, right before the 25th anniversary of this horrible tragedy where they slaughtered women and children in like in a bunker in a stairwell or something. They stuck a tank in there and it gassed them. It's unbelievable. And we're going to get all the details of what it was like in just 2 seconds as I share the show one more time. Here we go. We're going to build this up. Sean is there. Christine is there. Everybody, please share. Let's go do it. Ready? At a count of 1, 2, 3, share. All right. And I'm going to bring David in right now, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Waco Survivor. He's got his book out. The television event is out. I'm going to tell you how you can view it. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. David, please tell us how to pronounce your last name so we don't butcher it. David.
Hey, Mark. How you doing tonight, man? It's Thibodeau.
Good. How are you? Thibodeau, there you go. I that's what I thought, but I didn't want to butcher it. David Thibodeau, he survived the massacre over in Waco. It was a massacre at the hands of the federal government. Now, of course, I'm sure you know many, many people didn't agree what was going on at the Branch Davidian compound. But many folks have their ideas and theories of what should have took place and what took place. Where I want to start, David, is like really right at the beginning when you first said, well, I think I'm going to join David Koresh and go and be a Branch Davidian. When did that start? How did you get involved there in the first place?
That's a very good question. How did it all begin? It's a little different in the 6-part series than it is in the book. Now, my book is really accurate as to my experiences and what happened and what it was. The 6-part series took some liberties, dramatic licensing, if you will, which I didn't mind. I think they did a really good job humanizing people, so whatever. I'm happy they just did a 6-part series that I could be somewhat proud of. I never thought that I would like anything that was done on film. So they really exceeded my expectations. But to make I'll just try to make this brief. I met David Koresh and Steve Schneider at Guitar Center on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. And I walked in there with drumsticks, and I went to the electronic drum room, and there was two guys looking at a drum set. And they asked me if I would play it for them. I did. And when they were done, they said, we're looking for a drummer. Now, one guy had a business suit on. That was Steve Schneider. And then he introduced me to this other guy who had the T-shirt and jeans and was a guitarist, David Koresh. And he said, looking for a drummer. They handed me their card, and their card had said Messiah Productions on the front, on the back, it had all this religious scripture. So instantly I was turned off. I was not looking to get into a spiritual group or a biblical group, certainly, of any kind. I was just wanted to play rock and roll. And I handed the card back to him. Steve then said something I thought was very interesting. He said, listen, we're Christian. We're a little bit of everything. He said, we've been all over the world with this guy. We've studied the scriptures. Dave here knows something called the Seven Seals. We talk to rabbis, priests, preachers. We go all over the world and talk to people about the Seven Seals and see what they know. And then David shows them. It's just the way they came off non-preachy whatsoever to me. They came off like the Bible to them was a study, and they took it very seriously. And that kind of impressed me. That's why I had to listen to what they had to say, Mark. And over the course of the next 6 months, I got to know them before I ended up actually going to Waco. So it's not a thing that happened quickly. It happened over a period of time.
Right, right. And they gained your trust, and you guys are rocking out. You're playing the drums. They got a band, and you're having fun. And then you get to Waco. What made you decide to go to Waco?
Well, I was asked by David. He said that he was going to Waco for about a month, and that for a 2-week period, there would be people coming from all over the world, from England, from Australia, from New Zealand. I mentioned several other countries. I just said that it's a time. It's one of the festivals of God according to Scripture. And people come from all over the world, and they want to learn the seven seals directly. And he says, it's 2 weeks of very intense Bible study. But he says, what happens is I go to England, and I talk to kids that are going to seminary school, and I teach them more in one sitting than they learn their 2-3 years going to their seminary school. So they come over to Waco, and they want to learn from me for that 2-week period. So basically, I went out there. There's about 30 people living out there. Those are the hardcore group of people that lived at Waco, you know, 100% of the time. And the rest of them, the majority, lived in other countries and would come for these 2-week periods to really get intense study. And the place went, and at the time, remember, it was like 10 little houses, and it was the chapel area and the cafeteria area. And they were connected by a hallway. And so there was just those two areas. It wasn't the big building that we all know today. But literally, over the course of the next week, 150 people showed up. I mean, there's 150, 175 people all together that were there for that 2-week period, and it was pretty amazing. And I talked to all these people from these different countries. They all said the same thing to me. It was amazing. It was like a broken record. They said that they were studying Scripture all their lives. They want to know what it really means, and they learned more from David Koresh in one sitting than they learned their 2-3 years studying at seminary school or going to Catholic church or trying to figure it out for themselves. So they decided to come to Waco and be a part of it. I heard that story over and over and over and over and over again, and it was just absolutely fascinating.
So this guy, David Koresh, must have had some serious charisma then, and he was very amicable and people trusted him right away. Is that what was happening?
Well, that's what they say. But, you know, since we're talking about this, I'd like to just take maybe 5 minutes to talk about the history of Mount Carmel, because I think it's important. Now, it started pretty much with Ellen G. White, who started the Seventh-day Adventist movement. She had several books. People consider her to be inspired. People consider her to be a prophet. Now, Ellen G. White, when she died, these two other individuals, I can't remember their names off the top of my head, took it over, and people considered them to be inspired. Then it went to a man named Victor Howda, who had inspiration. And each time someone else took it over, they had more information of the Scripture, talking about someone that will come in the final days and reveal something. Then it went to Ben Roden when Victor died. Ben Roden claimed inspiration, and he built Mount Carmel. He's the one that bought something like 88 acres or 100-and-something acres in Waco and founded Mount Carmel there and started to build his thing. When Ben Roden died, his wife Lois took over. Now, a man named Vernon Howell asked a friend of his, I think he was living in Houston, and he said, how come there are no prophets anymore? And this old woman said, I know where there's a prophet. There's a prophet in Waco. They see she's a prophet. Her name's Lois Rhodes. And Vernon said, well, take me to her. I want to study with her. So Vernon Howell shows up at Waco, Texas, shows up in Mount Carmel, meets Lois, and starts studying under Lois over a period of time. He actually starts teaching the class. He starts teaching what everyone had been waiting for. So imagine that. Imagine a community that's been there 30, 40, 50 years. And imagine being an older person that has gone through other prophets, Ben Road and Lois Road. So finally, this little guy shows up, and he stutters. He's not really charismatic at all. He's kind of like he's great with machines and with engines, but you know, not filled with social graces. That's who David became.
Right.
What Vernon Howell became, David Koresh. So it seemed like the fulfillment of what everyone there who had been there for years had been waiting for, the seventh angel's messenger, if you will. And then what happened is Vernon went to Israel. That's where he claims he got his vision. He came back from Israel, and all the people there, the elders, if you will, all told me pretty much the same thing, that he became a different person. He had all this knowledge. He was opening the seven seals, showing them things that they had never seen before, but it all built off a foundation that they had had for years and years and years. That, to me, is a really, truly fascinating part of the story that people don't talk about or people don't really know. So he wasn't a fly-by-night man that just showed up and, you know, basically was really good at oratory and was able to pervert people's will, if you want. He really had something that built off a foundation that had been in place for years. I think that truly is a fascinating aspect of the story.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's pretty good. When he came back from Israel, he was like, he would look enlightened? Did he have a different expression? Did he have like a pep in his step? All of a sudden, he was like, "Bam! I'm ready to rock. Let's do this. I got to spread the word."
Well, yeah. What they said is that he was empowered in the sense that when he opened his mouth, it made sense and it came out very clearly and kind of fluidly, and it seemed like he was more intelligent, if you will. But more importantly, he was able to show from the book what he was talking about. He would go into Isaiah, which is a very long and complicated chapters of Scripture, or Isaiah, some of the almost most esoteric, if you will. But Isaiah is very, very deep. He was just able to just break it apart and show you what was being said, what was being done, how the kingdom was to be set up in Jerusalem, and that was going to usher in the time of trouble would come during the kingdom being set up in Israel. And Scripture actually says once the kingdom is set up, that God will come and live on the earth and will teach his knowledge to people directly. It literally says God will live on the earth. So that's
right.
You know, these are all fascinating scriptures that I had never read before. I had no idea any of this stuff. You know, none of the TV preachers that I saw ever talked about that. The Catholic Church never talked about these things. They never even got into Scripture, really. David was 100% Scripture. He would go from take one chapter of the Bible, harmonize it with another chapter, another prophet, someone in the New Testament, harmonize that. He could just put it together in a way that was very easy to understand. And even if it wasn't easy to understand, you know, a lot of things are easy to understand. Some things are extremely complicated. You could tell there was definitely something there. And it wasn't something that he just came up with the top of his head.
So then, so now it's like, I don't know, we'll say end of 1992. What's going on at the compound that makes people want to go, well, we got to go over there with a warrant? What's happening? Why are they gearing up to come over there, you know, and have this 51-day stand?
I think a couple of things happened, and this was before my time, too. Before I got there, there had been something called the New Light Revelation. And it was something that divided the group. And the New Light Revelation was that at the time of the end, there's scriptures in the New Testament to talk about it. At the time of the end, those that have wives should live as though they have none. That's the teaching of the New Testament. But basically, that was what was going to separate the upper room from the lower room form of education. In other words, if you really wanted to be with this truth, if you really believed in it and saw that this was a message for the final days, if this was the last message, that if you're married, all of a sudden you're not going to be married anymore. It's, you know, the guys are going to be celibate. David believed that basically he believed that he was a reincarnation, if you will, of Cyrus. Cyrus was the Persian king who conquered Babylon. And Kresh believed that, you know, one way or another through all of this happening, that this message would conquer Babylon. I don't mean militaristically. That's something that's supposed to happen later when God took up the kingdom. I'm talking just conquer it through, you know, having the truth out there being revealed finally. But he talked about the truth being fought against once he started revealing it, that it would be fought against. And this is some of the things we started to see happen. A guy named Mark Bro left the group at the New Light Revelation. He didn't want to give up his wife. So he left, and then he started fighting against David and trying to get David to be, you know, looked into and investigated, if you will. And then David had the fortune of meeting, or the misfortune, depends on how you look at it, I guess. They went to gun shows quite a bit, and they had some firearms. You know, some of the guys went hunting. I never, it wasn't my thing, but they met a guy named Henry McMahon, who was a licensed firearms dealer. And through Henry, Henry believed that David was his preacher. Now, Henry started listening to David and would come over Saturday for Sabbath and basically get Bible studies from David. So he really liked David and respected him, and he started showing him the gun business. Particularly some of the other younger guys really kind of got into that, started going to gun shows and buying and selling. Legally, they got the firearms license. So, you know, we had a stock. We had an inventory. Everything was done legally there through that firearm business. It was suspected that some of the guns were being converted to fully automatic weapons without the proper licensing, which is a $200 license for every, at the time, this is back in 93, obviously. So at the time, I think it was a $200 tax, and you had to have the proper yellow sheet, that kind of thing. So, you know, even if firearms were being fully automatic, you know, converted to full auto, all the ATF really had was that tax law. That's all they had. That was their whole thing. Only one person on the search and arrest warrant, that was David Koresh. Nobody else. Not Paul Fadda, not Dave Thibodeau, none of the women, none of the children, just David Koresh. He jogged in front of their surveillance house. The ATF set up a surveillance house. They were watching us. We knew who they were. They came over and introduced themselves as ranchers going to a technical college, TSTC, which is where they teach, you know, auto shop like that. And when I asked one of the agents, Robert, I said, so what are you studying there at TSTC? He says, I'm studying philosophy. He said, philosophy. And I said, you're studying philosophy at a technical college. That's fascinating, Robert. Simply fascinating. And these guys also had, you know, they had like Serengeti sunglasses. They had a few, you know, really nice vehicles. When they moved in, they didn't move any furniture in. They just moved in like what looked like camera equipment, cases that would carry electronic equipment in. That's you know, I mean, they were sloppy. It was ridiculous.
A tactic used by the FBI apparently these days is people infiltrating the group. Do you think you had informants inside the compound? I don't know if I want to call it a compound. It was like a place where people lived. It wasn't really a compound.
Yeah, they call it a compound. It's one of the words they used to demonize. They militarized the situation. You know, words like cult, compound, charismatic cult leader, the sinful messiah. Yeah, it gets as ridiculous as a sniper is not a sniper. A sniper is a forward observer. They don't use tanks, but they use CEDs. Here's how ridiculous it got, Mark. If you read some of their some of the congressional reports, when a flashbang grenade explodes, it doesn't explode, but it performs a rapid expansion of gases. See, this is how ridiculous they are. They make everything they do sound really light and airy and fluffy. And they make everything of the people that they're trying to demonize as evil as possible. Cultists, brainwashed. They have weapons. They're not firearms. They have weapons. They outgunned us. They're just horrible, horrible people. It was an ambush. If it was an ambush, man, a lot more than four ATF agents. If we were ready and everyone in that building was firing at the cattle trailers before they would have been wiped out before they ever made it to the front door, my friend. There was no ambush, and they knew it. And there was, three different cameras at three different points down at that the ATF had. When Congress asked for those cameras, where are those videotapes? They all said that they were, accidentally erased. I mean, it's just so convenient, these people. They lie, they cover up, and then they say, oh, that's conspiratorial. You're saying we covered things up? Of course the government didn't cover things
framing.
Up. You're thinking like a conspiratorialist. You know,
they frame people to.
Yeah. Go. Your turn. I've talked enough.
No problem. They like to frame people and set people up, withhold exculpatory evidence in court and during trials. They have completely flipped the folks that swear an oath to protect our country are doing irreparable harm every day to the document that protects the people, the Constitution, which was horribly violated. Agree or not, folks, with David Koresh and the folks down at the Branch Davidian in Waco, Texas, the use of force was to set an example. It was nothing else. And maybe they were trying out some new weapons like they did like in some of the wars we go to. You know, we said we create a war and we try out our new weapons to see how good they are. You know, maybe that was like a training session and all of that. And I watched this documentary, and it was in favor of you guys, and it was claiming, you know, you guys were claiming, well, I don't care what they say, the FBI shot first, and they were claiming no way. But there was, I guess, a helicopter flying over the top of the infrared cameras going. And it was clearly the first shot came from an FBI agent outside of the compound. A couple of shots went off.
You're talking about the last day, though, just so you know, that the infrared video comes from a plane that the FBI was flying on the day of the fire, which would be April 19th.
Yeah.
We believe that, you know, that the ATF fired first, because they fired at Peter Jett, who was on top of the grain silo, and then Winston Blake was killed by a bullet from the helicopter at the back of the building. But, you know, what you're saying is, and I want to talk about the infrared in just a second, but before I forget, Mark, if you don't mind, what you just said to me was very inspiring. And there's a quote from history that I've always keep in my mind. I think it's very important. It was said by Senator Henry Clay in the 1830s. And he said, "The devices of power and its minions are the same in all countries and in all ages. First, it marks its victim and denounces it, exciting the public hatred so it can conceal its own abuses and encroachments." Best way I've ever heard it said. And I believe that's exactly what's happened here. They've had 100 years to perfect this, of course. So now the government knows exactly what to do, exactly how to demonize to the point where people won't mind once they go in and kill you. That's crazy. And, you know, the average
American
is worried about their lives. Yeah.
And they have complete control of the media too. So they use the media to paint people as crazy or over the top, or look at these people, you know, whatever. They use the media because it's like a propaganda machine for them. It's scary.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, you take over the media, take over the schools, take over the healthcare, take over everything, kill the people. I don't know. You know, it's kind of scary where we're at right now in our country. That's what it looks like. You know, like they're trying to like just destroy everything.
Yeah, it is what it looks like. And, you know, another interesting point, a lot of people say David Koresh is a co-leader, that David Koresh is guilty of brainwashing, mind control. Well, if that's the case, then what took David Koresh years and years and years in some cases of working with people over and over and over, showing the Seven Seals over and over and over again to different people? I watched the guy personally say after 24 hours giving studies, he would fall asleep with a Bible in his hand and wake up and start over. And if a new person came in, he would start from the beginning and do the whole thing. So I personally saw him. I've never seen anyone with such drive that truly believed in something more than David Koresh. And that's why people believed him, because he would do whatever it took to bring someone to the truth. He took it that seriously. And what took David years with some people took the FBI 51 days to control the entire world and how the entire world viewed what happened at Waco. Just 51 days to brainwash and mind control everybody in this country. I would say 90% of the people in this country, because there were those percentages that did go out and see what was wrong. There were the Ron Engelmans and those that started forming militias and started forming groups to protect themselves against the tyrannical government. There were patriots that saw what was going on here, but they were very few and far between. But so, you know, same with the Revolutionary War. It was only like 3% of Americans that fought the Revolutionary War, right?
Yes, indeed. 3%. All my 3% brothers and sisters. I love my 3%ers. They're a good, strong group still. A lot of them, you can find them up in the panhandle right now, doing hurricane debris removal and standing up strong for their fellow Floridians. That's a fact. I know that for a fact.
These people go out and do something. They don't just sit around and wait for it to come to them. They go out and they help people. I mean, that's, you know.
And they help everybody. They don't pick sides.
Yeah.
They help everybody.
That's the Christian idea.
Okay, they may not like all sides. They might not like all sides, but they help all sides, whether they like them or not. That's why I love my brothers and sisters in the 3% groups, because when the chips are down, they help everybody. So search out your 3%ers, folks. They're good people. Amen. Hallelujah. And
I agree, my friend.
Now here it is. It's April. It's day 51, and I'm, you know, everybody's watching, and me, just a regular old schmo sitting on a couch, going, "Holy crap! I can't believe the government's rolling in like this. What the hell is that?" All right, like if they really wanted to arrest David Koresh, couldn't they have done that like at the feed store? Why did they have to do it like that?
Yeah,
that's what I want.
He jumped in front of their house. Like he was, like I said, he was the only one on the search and arrest warrant. They could have gotten him, but they wanted a big thing. They want, you know, they screwed up with Randy Weaver, and they figured with this thing, they could get this big religious group that has firearms, and they could bust him and have, you know, they look good that they could save the day. But frankly, they were just too inept. They didn't even listen to their own undercover person, Robert Rodriguez. They threw him under the bus. When he came out saying, "Listen, they know that you're coming, cancel the attack, do not go forward with a raid," they did anyway, and then said that he never told them that. So it's like they don't even listen to their own people. And then when they screw it up, they throw those people under the bus. You know, Rodriguez won $3 million lawsuit against the government or something. You know, that's the other thing. We can't even fight it in court. We had a civil case where we were trying to show that the government's actions killed those people. The judge, Walter Smith, was the exact same judge in the criminal case who didn't allow any of the witnesses, of our witnesses, to testify. He wouldn't allow. We had fire marshals
direct
to come in and say what's that?
Direct constitutional violation. That's a direct constitutional violation. Just give me 1 second here. I was just going to do a little station ID real quick. And ladies and gentlemen, check.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with David Thibodeau. He is a Waco massacre survivor where the folks at the Branch Davidian compound were slaughtered by the government. Whether you agree with them or disagree with them, the excessive use of force was right there for all to see. It was like the beginnings of the militarization of our police force. It was like now they got tanks and they got shields and they got machine guns and they got all the weapons of war. And so when you have all the weapons of war and no war, what do? You create a war. But so I have a question from one of my good friends in the live feed. And because as we all know, there was all kinds of rumors and things being said about David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. And one of the claims was that he was having sex with underage people. Was that true or was that false? Just to clarify so the people on the live feed can get a clear answer.
Yeah, sure. When I was doing research for the book, this was 20 years or so ago, because I had met Rachel Koresh, if you will, Michelle Jones, and I had met all these people. Michelle was Rachel's sister. When I had met Michelle, she had her 3-year-old daughter, Serenity, and she was 17 or 18 when I met her. She seemed much more mature getting to know her as a person. I mean, I was a 23-year-old living in Hollywood, and I found the people, especially the women at Mount Carmel, to be very mature. So I never looked at Michelle as being a young girl. She was like, when I did my research, she was 17. So she had Serenity when she was 14, and that was one of the children that was David Koresh's. So, yes, Koresh did have sleep with underage girls, and he did have kids. Michelle was the youngest that I could find. The problem with that is that Texas law at the time said 14 with parental consent. You could marry at 14 with parental consent, which through her parents they had. So technically it wasn't a violation of the law. But however, when you know, during the research, find out he is actually guilty of being a polygamist because he has many wives. But nonetheless, that has nothing to do with the federal government. That has to do with the state. And the state sent people in to check the children, to talk to the children. They saw no signs of abuse. Kids were very well behaved. They couldn't prove the case that Koresh had underage girls that were his wives, if you will, that he had children with. So they had to drop their case. So, you know, it has nothing to do with the federal government. my role, okay, I went through this. I lived through it. I came out. I wrote a book because I was so disgusted with all the things that people were saying and all the miscommunications and misrepresentations of what would happen. So I wrote a book. And I made my book extremely, painfully truthful. In writing my book, I faced things that were so hard for me to face, man. It was embarrassing. It was, but you know what? In my book, if you ever read my book, it's Waco, a survivor story. They made me rename it when they came out with the series. But in it, I tell things about myself that are embarrassing. It's just like, didn't want anyone to say that I was unbiased in writing this book. So I hired a writer to help me and to help look at all the things that maybe as someone that was so close to it didn't want to face. So, you know, I put myself through the ringer in writing this book. That's why people try to accuse me of making money off the tragic story. I never even recouped the small advance that I was giving. And I didn't care, man. I didn't write the book for money, man. I wrote the book because nobody knew what happened. There was a million misconceptions. The FBI won't tell you. They were lying to you every single day. I can look at myself right in the mirror. So I offer the truth to people, and most people don't want it. And that's fine with me. I know that what I did was right. I know that in writing the book, it put a whole new spin on everything. It's the truth. I'm sorry. It's the truth.
Yeah.
You don't have to like it, but I told the truth.
Well, you know what we learned. What I learned over doing this radio show for 5.5 years, over almost 700 and something episodes, is truth has become the new hate speech. And if you speak it, they're coming after you. It's pretty scary sometimes. Just because you want to say, "Hey, listen, that's not red. It's blue." What? They've been telling me that my whole life. It's been red. Nope, that's blue. And then they hit a lie for so many years. When you hear the truth, you go, "There's no way. There's no way. They've been telling me for the last 25 years it's this way. Sorry, they lied." And you can't believe the truth. That's how far we've come, where the lie is so intense that the truth seems crazy. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. Now, if someone wants to get your book, Waco, A Survivor's Story, you sent me the link. I posted it around on my, page and stuff. So it's up there now.
Let's clarify something about that. You can get it cheaper through Amazon. You can get it for like $11.99 or $12.99 on Amazon. If you buy it through the link, I'm selling it for $19.99 plus shipping. But and I went through heck with Amazon trying to get this link so I could have it for this radio show for your audience. If you go to the link and order it directly through me through Amazon, my link on my Facebook page, it's Waco A Survivor Story is the Facebook page. So friend me, Waco A Survivor Story. It's my author page. Use the link on that or the link that you put on, and that will be ordering the book for me directly, and I sign and personalize every book that comes to me through Amazon. So if you order through my link, you'll have a personalized signed copy of my book that I will send you directly.
Excellent. And folks, if you want that link, it's on my pages now, and I will post it here on the live feed later on when I get off the show to make sure that it's here in the comment section of the live feed. And you can go to the Patriot Nation Radio Network on Facebook right now, and the link is there. It's exactly what he sent me in the messenger. Hey, Mark. And the whole thing, I just copied it and pasted it. Exactly how you sent it. I like personalized stuff, it's fun.
Yeah,
so, now, out of the whole situation, there were 9 survivors, correct?
9 came out at the fire. There were 9 fire survivors. Those are people that went through the entire siege and came out on the last day. But 23 people came out during the siege, mostly women and mostly older women and children. A few men came out, like Renus Abraham, Livingston Figg, and some of the guys came out as well. 23 during the siege, 9 at the fire, so it was 30-something.
Right. Gotcha. And how did you wind up escaping yourself? Because you stayed right till the end almost, right? And then you ran out when the place was on fire?
I did. I thought that because, well, I watched the tank come through the front door. I was the chaplain. I watched the tank come through the front door and bring the two steel doors into the area that I was in. So I had to back away from that. And I got to tell you, Mark, there's something very powerful about seeing a tank come through your front door. It's something you don't expect. It's something you'll never forget. You know,
yeah, that's pretty scary.
No, my friend. It's pretty crazy.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen.
You know.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the live feed, our good friend Dwayne Emmer. He'll be joining us on November 29th, 8 p.m. right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Show. What's happening, Dwayne? Thanks for tuning in. Sorry, David. He was up there at the Malia Wildlife Refuge when the Bundys and them were sticking up for the Hammonds in a federal land grab situation. And, yeah, he's the gentleman who rode Hellboy. If you've seen any of the pictures, he was there with on the horse with the flag. That was Dwayne. He's at a halfway house now, and he's getting out, and he's going to come on the show and give us an interview. So I'm looking forward to that. God bless Dwayne Emmer and all the P3s that were caught up in this horrific situation, who stood up for all Americans. They didn't know who you are. They didn't care who you are, but they stood up for you. Remember that, folks. And don't forget this, hashtag We Are The Wall. I believe it's starting to trend, maybe. I don't know, but I saw it somewhere. Hashtag We Are The Wall. Because we got now, like, I don't know, thought Sean Hannity was telling me 14,000 little migrants. The little innocent migrants are coming to America. Yeah. You know? I got a question. I don't know if you're watching this, David, right? They're saying now it's 10 to 14,000 people are, you know, traipsing along 20 plus miles a day, over 2,000 miles. Where are they going to the bathroom? What are they drinking? What are they eating? And who's paying for all this? Do you have any idea? I have no idea. I think it's another job. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know. Frankly, I'm more concerned with cities like San Francisco, who there's so much feces in the street. Anyone who's lived there their whole lives now has to leave because of the gentrification. I mean, there's issues in this country that we need to take care of. So, it seems like it's limitless. And I personally believe if we'd stop making a couple self-bombers that we could afford to really do something about some of our problems. But for some reason, we have to have more military equipment every year just to kill people with. And I don't know. I mean, I just appointed it all seems very wrong to me.
It's the military-industrial complex, and they use social media, artificial intelligent programs to manipulate and propagandize the people. So if you have a brain and you think, they hate free thinkers. You can see through the fog and the smoke that they're putting in everybody's eyes and see what's really shaking. Some folks are awake, and that's why we do shows like this, and that's why we bring folks like David on the show. Roger Stone. I had Roger Stone on recently, and what a great interview. And they're trying to rake him across the coals in it just because he was Donald Trump's friend for 40 years and said, hey, you should run for president. You know? It's crazy. And it's another case of the FBI withholding evidence, lying to the FISA court. That's a secret court that you have to verify anything and everything that you bring to the judge. And they lied to the judge and the assistant Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the number two man in the DOJ, signed, I believe it was the third warrant against Paul Manafort, I believe is the guy that they were scamming on. And he knew it was all lies. He knew it was all bull crap, and he still signed it and gave it to the judge, knowing full well it was crap. And he's not in jail. But if you did that, David, or I did that, we'd never see the light of day. We'd be Bubba's best friend. We'd be in the cellar with Bubba going, oh, boy. Oh, boy. At least I would. I'm a little scrawny son of a gun. I'm 5'9", 170 pounds. I would get killed up in there. I ain't going to make it up. I'm not a good – prison in me is not a good mix. I try to stay out of that place best
what's
I can. So far, so good. So far, so good. So far, so good.
That's good. You'd
ask
some questions.
Yes, sir.
If I can just make this, because I think it's kind of important. Because when I was talking about the tank coming through the front door, the CS gas all morning, so over 6 hours they're gassing us, and all this stuff's going on. The speakers are blaring. They're telling us to come out with your hands up. But when you see a tank come through your front door, the last thing you want to do is go out into the hole that just made that tank, okay? I thought for that 6 hours that if I stepped outside, I would be shot. I did not think I would survive. But when what happened was when the wall that I was leaning against started to catch fire, it started to singe the side of my head. And that's when I looked out and I saw Jamie Casillo and Derek Lovelock walk out of a hole that one of the tanks had made. I just figured it was literally the last second. I figured it would be better to be shot than to burn to death. I didn't want to burn to death is what it came down to.
Right.
So I exited the hole. And
I have to agree.
It turns out that I came out on the side where the cameras that were 3 miles away could still see us, where the media was. The media could see the area of the building that myself and the three other people that survived, where I was, the four people that came out of the same hole I did, all survived and walked up to the end of the property where the Red Cross sign was. Of course, the speaker system was telling us to walk to the Red Cross sign. So that's the only reason we're here. The people that survived, eight of them came out of the front of the building and the side of the building where the cameras could see us. Only, I think it was Graham Craddock survived that came out of the back, and he ended up in the tower. And I don't know how he got there. I've never been able to talk to Graham about that. But nobody else survived that came out of the back of that building. And according to the infrared video that you can see on Waco, the Rules of Engagement, which I think is one of the best documentaries that have been made about Waco. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, and Waco, a New Revelation are two documentaries that are excellent. The rest of them have pretty much been crap. Those two are great. Well, Day 51 was pretty good, too. But anyway, make a long story short, the FBI had a camera, a plane flying above the building 2 miles up with an infrared video. On the infrared video, you could see an explosion at the back of the building in the gym area where the tanks have totally devastated that and leveled it to the ground. And then you see two tanks, you see the heat plumes from the tanks, and then you see fully automatic weapons fire from two different shooters next to the tanks going into the building. So, you know, they fired into that building. We have 17 different autopsy reports of people that were killed with bullet wounds in the center of their head and the center of the chest. Yet the government said it was a mass suicide. That's not how you kill yourself. Even Giovanni, who was the medical examiner, said, we did not think this was a mass suicide. This looked more like a mass homicide to us. And
right.
Yet, the government still denies the infrared video. They say it's sunlight reflection. And I, you know,
look,
a 14-year-old kid can look at that tape and know that that's fully automatic weapons fire.
Right. But don't forget, a lot of these people that worked for the Clintons and that committed suicide with two shots to the back of the head. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I do. I try to keep, when I'm talking about Waco, I try to keep any other, and I don't like to say conspiratorial because I know there's conspiratories out there, conspiracies. You know, I've read a lot of the statements that you're referring to. I try to keep it out of, I don't say anything for sure that I don't know about. I know about Waco. I've studied everything I could possibly find. I witnessed what I witnessed. The things that I didn't witness that I say are true, it's because I've talked to someone that saw it or I've read every report on CS Gas, everything you could think of I could ever get my hands on. That's what I thought. I just try to keep it 100% what I know I can prove. If I don't know I can prove something, I try not to talk about it. Maybe that's your job, Mark, if you don't mind.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Yes, sir. I understand fully. Absolutely. And that is fully my opinion. I don't know for sure, and I do not have facts that the trail of bodies behind the Clintons have two bullets to the back of the head. Who knows? That's conspiracy chitter-chatter that we read on the social media. And then we get twisted and warped and demented because we're on Facebook all day getting manipulated by the social media manipulation applications. It's crazy what they do to us. So now, they shot David Koresh at the front door. Is that correct? When he opened up the door, was it a sniper? Was it somebody standing out front? What exactly happened?
When they came out of the cattle trailers, they were screaming and yelling. It was ineligible what they were saying. David went to the front door and he said, hold on, there's women and children here, let's talk about it. Let's talk, let's reason this out. And then everyone at the front door said the bullet that said that the door that he was holding went back in his hand from the velocity of the bullets hitting the door. He slammed the door and fell back, and one of the bullets that was coming through the doors hit Perry Jones. He was a 70-year-old unarmed man at the front with David. Hit him, and he went down screaming in pain from a bullet wound to the stomach. When that happened, some of the guys that were at the front with David fired back. And that's, you know, all hell had broken loose. At the trial in San Antonio, it was indicated some of the first shots were probably fired at the dogs. We had an Alaskan Malamute fawn and her four pups, and there's five dogs altogether. The Alaskan Malamutes in a penned up area. They could not have hurt these agents. They went to there was one group that went to deal with the dogs, and they shot the dogs in cold blood first. So it's believed that some of the first shots were fired at the dogs. And at the front door, it all happened kind of simultaneously. Now, if you were in the back of the building, like Kevin Whitecliffe was at the back of the building, he told me, and when he said it, he was yelling and screaming, so I know that it was true. He was very emotional about what he had seen, and he saw the helicopters come in and shooting at the back of the building. He believed wholeheartedly that the helicopters fired first at the building. So I believe if you were in the back and you saw the helicopters, that you believe they fired first at the building. And if you were at the front, that you believe that the first shots were fired at David and the dogs.
Right. And do you believe that they were shooting at the dogs? I don't know. That sounds kind of – were the dogs riled up? Was the dog trying to go after them? You know, you don't shoot a dog just because he's barking, you know. Ruff, 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 bang.
No,
I don't think so.
No. They had a whole group. That was their job, was to go and eliminate the dogs. That the first thing they did was shoot the dogs in cold blood in their pen. I know they did it. My friend Greg, he lined the bodies of the dogs up. They were riddled with bullets. First thing they did. And this also came on the trials in San Antonio by ATF agents who said that they believed the first shots were fired at the dogs. So, no, I'm not making that up. They murdered the dogs first day. That absolutely ended the story. There's no controversy here.
They're the living, breathing alarm system. They got to get rid of that.
Yeah.
That's basically why they do that, to silence it, so that when they're sneaking up on you, they don't start barking. That's what they did that for. It's horrifying. I tell you what, I hate to say this, but sometimes I've come across a lot of people in my life, and 9 times out of 10, if you said, okay, Mr. Mark, here's a dog and here's a man. You have two choices. Kill the dog, hang out with the man. Kill the man, keep the dog. Guess which one I'm doing? I'm taking the dog, man. We're heading for the woods. See you later. I'm telling you. But anyway. It was a 6-part television event. Is there a DVD series, or is there something that folks can get their hands if they want to watch it? Because I think I want to get the book and the DVD series if there are such a thing. I know I can get the book.
Yeah, you can't get a DVD of it, but what you can do is you can stream it on Amazon. It's on Amazon now, and you can pay to stream it, or you can go right to Paramount Networks and stream it directly from that website, from Paramount Networks.
And that's Waco, A Survivor's Story. And I saw, so I was looking at some of the photos. You guys were out on the set and stuff. You got to go on the set. Did you like help them kind of get a feel of what was really going on? Were you an advisor during the filming, or were you just hanging out and watching?
I was a technical consultant. And what I did is, I'm glad you brought that up. When I started my author, I had all these pictures of being on the set. But I didn't really feel right about sharing it on Waco, the Davidian page, or any of the memorial pages. So I made an author page, Waco A Survivor Story, on Facebook. And I'm fine with sharing those pictures, you know, on my author page, because this is all a part of it. So, yeah, I have pictures of, you know, me with some of the cast members. And well, I got pictures of I've been at Mount Carmel last month. I spent in Waco at Mount Carmel talking to tourists, people that were coming through that wanted to know. And there's a guy named Eddie Oliver that's on the site, and he's actually done a very good job at and giving people tours and showing people what really happened and telling people the truth there. And so I was there signing my books and, you know, talking to people and giving tours myself, and it was great. I'm actually going to be going back there next month to do that again, because I thought it so fulfilling being able to talk to people and give them the true historical account of what really happened there. That's something that
and
was lacked at the property of Mount Carmel. And now we're trying to make that happen now, so people can go and really get a good tour and really find out what happened and learn about that part of their American history.
So how has life been for David Thibodeau in the last 25 years since this took place?
The last
has been
crappy. Pretty crappy. Well,
I could imagine.
No, honestly, what happened, for years I gave talks about this, and I would talk for, you know, groups of 500 people, whatever. I mean, I was doing preparedness expos. I was doing great, man. I mean, I was giving talks. I was meeting people. I was, you know, selling books and just living off that, and I wasn't making a lot of money, but I made enough money to get to the next destination and get to the next crowd to talk to. And what happened was I saw the infrared video at William Gazecki's house when they were doing the documentary, Wake of the Rules of Engagement. And after I saw the documentary, after I saw the infrared video, it affected me in a way I did not foresee or imagine. What happened is I was given a talk, and I had the laser pointer, and I was showing the infrared video live publicly for the first time. And I was showing the infrared, and I was showing where the fully automatic weapons fire was. I started yelling, and I started saying, "They're killing him! They're shooting him! Can't you see they're shooting him?" And I'm on stage in front of 500 people, and I lost my composure completely. And I didn't realize what had happened until after, when I'm signing books. I had quite a long queue of people that were buying my books. And one guy came up to me and said, "That was a very powerful talk. It was very powerful talk. I really enjoyed it, but you're very angry." And when he said that, what happened is I saw what had happened. It wasn't an out-of-body experience, but I realized that I was in control in front of an audience. And I couldn't allow that to happen again. I realized that I had some issues I had to deal with. So I stopped. I went back to playing drums. I joined a band. I stopped talking about it because I was angry all the time, and I didn't want to be that person. So
right.
I needed some time. Now, with the series coming out, it's put everything back. You know, I've had many years to deal with it. Yeah, but frankly, I had all kinds of – I was a bit of a misfit, man. You know, I mean, I played in a rock band. I drove a cab. I worked in restaurants. I did whatever I could to get by. You know, I mean, I kind of
– Yeah.
I could have done so much more and been so much more. I wasted a lot of time, frankly, dealing with this anger and these issues that I had. But that's just how it is. I mean, you know, you know, sometimes that's what it takes. It takes time to get through something as traumatic as something like Waco.
And immediately following everything, that you got out, what happened right after you got out? Like, you know, where did you go? What happened?
Oh, yeah. I was released to my mother's custody, and they told her to get the hell out of Texas with me and do not come back. I've been back several times since. But the point is, yeah. I was told that. So I went back to Maine, spent some time here, ended up back in Hollywood, Los Angeles, and then I ended up in Austin after that. So I lived in L.A., I lived in Austin, and then had a relationship. I was married, got a divorce, and ended up back in Bangor. Yeah, just playing in bands here.
Right on, man. I play guitar since 1980. And we're currently 80 proof, working on some 80s hair band rock and roll like Poison and Motley Crue and Bon Jovi and Def Leppard. Yay!
You know, that's funny. One of my very close friends is a fan around here called 80 something.
That's funny. And we're kind of an AC/DC tribute band too. We play 36 of their greatest hits. So
very
it's a lot
nice.
Of fun. I love the rock. My role in the band is Malcolm Young. So I was thinking maybe I could try out for the band. I don't know. You know, they need a good rhythm. And I've been playing it for years now. I do pretty good, I think.
Hey, man. You got to take every shot you can in life.
I love jamming, man. I love jamming. Well, maybe one day you make it down to the Sunshine State. I got an electronic drum set out on the lanai. You know? Guitars and pianos. And well, I'm going to wrap up here. I want to thank I'm north of Tampa on the Gulf Coast.
Oh, nice. Very nice, man.
It's nice over here, and the hurricanes go around us, it seems, thank God. You know, if we get a hurricane here, it hit over on the Atlantic coast, and it came across, and it's always like no more than a Category 2. We get lucky. It's been over 50 years since my area has been directly hit by a hurricane, so I'm thankful, and I feel like I picked the right spot to move to.
Nice. Very nice.
So, David, give out the website information one more time before we wrap it up so folks can maybe get a copy of your book or get to view the six-part series,
yeah.
Waco, A Survivor Story.
We're working on an official website for the property, Mount Carmel, if you will. That's not ready yet. But what I do have is on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. It's my author page. It's Waco, A Survivor Story. So it's that easy, Waco, A Survivor Story, and you can friend me and all that. There's a link there to get my book. If you buy it through the link, it'll take you to Amazon. You can buy it from me, and I will personalize it to whoever buys it directly and sign a copy and send it right out to you.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Unfortunately, there was a horrible event that took place 25 years ago. And I'm glad that you made it and you're living. God bless you, man. You know, it was a horrible thing. Whether we agree with what happened up there or not, whether we believe what they told us or we believe what we believe, the use of force is never okay in my view, no matter what. And I'm not into militarized police forces because next thing you know, they're going to be like the SS Guard. Do you believe that Hillary should be president? No. Bang. It's almost that bad, So we really got to keep bringing the truth and keep talking to people. I believe it's very, very important. Again, David, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Mark. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, and feel free to post anything and everything that you have and are selling or whatever to my pages. Yeah, full reign. Dump it on my pages anytime you want. And call, too.
Thanks,
you can call the show anytime and say, hey, what's going on? I heard the topic. Just press 1. Send me a message.
Cool.
Let me know you call. It's always good. Let me know you call him if you're going to call in. Hey, I'm listening. I'm going to call in. Okay. Press 1. Thanks, David.
Thanks, buddy.
Ladies. All right. There you have it, folks. That's David Thibodeau, Waco, A Survivor Story. And that's the name of the Facebook page as well. And you go over there. You can. There's a link to his book. If you buy it there, he'll send you a signed copy. Waco, A Survivor Story, crazy stuff, and you heard it there, there was a 14-year-old girl with a baby, yes, and they weren't rumors that he had underage girl there, but Texas law at the time, if they had parental consent, it was okay, apparently, so I don't know where that goes from there. And she was the youngest, apparently. You heard it here, David Thibodeau. So who knows if he was a cult leading child molester. That's what you can't trust the media, folks. So first off, if the media said it, right off the bat, I'm like, yeah, maybe not true. But more than likely not true. Tom Brokaw, and we're at Waco. I don't know. I don't believe it. But folks, we got a little bit on the schedule coming up here. I got Catherine Gates Skipper. She's working with a veterans group who are actually situated in Gainesville right now, and they are taking supplies via – I don't know if they're flying it in a small plane or taking it up in a chopper, but they are airlifting supplies right to the hurricane disaster zone, and they'll be doing it until further notice. So we'll be talking about the organization she's working with, and we'll also have honorable homeless veterans from Inverness, Florida. They have now got 300 veterans off the streets and into homes, and that's their mission, is to get homeless vets into homes. God bless them. Honorable homeless veterans and Catherine Gates Skipper airlifting supplies to the hurricane disaster zone until further notice. It's really important stuff. It's really good stuff. And you heard it here, too, during the show, Dwayne Emmer. He was up there at the Malia Wildlife Refuge and the Bundy Ranch. riding Hellboy and carrying a flag. There's many, many pictures that were taken that were very inspirational. Dwayne Emmer, fresh out of from the halfway house, serving his time for this travesty that took place that culminated with the death of Lavoy Finicum, murdered by the FBI. Four agents now, you know, in court, charged. Who knows? I think they're probably going to get off, of course, because they're the FBI. They withhold evidence. They lie, cheat, steal, they do whatever they got to do to push their overbearing policing authority on the people. The Federal Bureau of Investigation was created to investigate the federal government, not the people. That's just what I think. But again, that's Dwayne Emmer on Monday the 29th. So we're racking them up here. We're trying to get some shows together. Hey, Jerome, if you're watching, Mr. Jerome Corsi, it would be great to have you come on the show. He's been watching, folks, and he's been letting this show go on his pages. We had Roger Stone on. I was hoping that would be the catalyst to get Jerome Corsi to come on. Of course, the FBI is investigating him, too, and looking into him with, you know, with the Russian collusion and the dossier. Who the hell calls it a dossier anyway? That's Jesus Christ. It's a with some information in it, for crying out loud. Anyway, folks, that leads me to this part of the show. It's the Star-Spangled Banner, performed by our good friend and pal, Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com. Music on a Mission, the Storyteller Edition. You want to get you a copy today. It's really good. It is now an iTunes bestseller. But this is his version of the Star-Spangled Banner, and we're going to wrap it up right here, folks. And don't forget to tune in Thursday, 8 o'clock. I'm live right after A Conservative's Perspective with my pal, James Bostic. We've been doing this now for like 3 years together as a team. We joined forces at the World Integrity News Network. If you're there from the World Integrity News Network, what's happening? I see my nephews watching. What's happening, John? Congratulations on having a girl. Hey, if she's there with you, hello. Nice to meet you. I'm Uncle Mark. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the Star-Spangled Banner performed by my pal and buddy, Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com. Star-Spangled Banner, here we go. They might. It's probably going to be a commercial first. That's right, folks. DaveBrayUSA.com. Music on a Mission, the Storyteller Edition. You can hear that, Into the Fire, Amazing Grace, Taps, Freedom Rings, and more. Head on over and don't forget LibertyRush.com. social media without the libtarded rhetoric. And with that, folks, I want to say goodnight. God bless, and I'll see you Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here. Don't miss it. You're having a blast. Good night, because without you, there's no show. So thank you. Thank you all. Good night, and God bless America. God bless you. Hallelujah. We made it. Peace.